How is he going? We'll be getting started in about a minute. Good morning. Just so we're all in the same place at the same time, this is session 4075 on Advancing Public Health, General Education, and Experiential Learning for College Undergraduates. I am Mark Hiller. I'm a faculty member at the University of New Hampshire and have been involved in undergraduate public health courses in education over the past couple decades or so, and have been really excited to see this initiative, you know, taking shape and moving forward. Today's session is organized by folks who have been involved in this effort for some time. I want to pay particular thanks at the beginning for the APHA Education Board, who is sponsoring the session. Give just a couple minutes of orientation in terms of, you know, what we're doing, why we're here, and how we're going to proceed for the balance of the session. The average college student, even since 9/11, as we probably all have realized, largely does not appreciate, probably doesn't even know what public health is, its relevance to them, its increasing importance in the world today. In addition, college students largely, or at least seemingly, have a value orientation that has heretofore centered more on an individual perspective rather than expanding and being aware of the opportunities to, you know, cast their net or focus more on the broader social good or public health interests. Thirdly, we recognize, and I realized this a few days ago at the Leadership Day for the Committee on Affiliates, as I looked out over the affiliates from all 52 affiliates around the country, that we, or at least a large percentage of us in public health, are graying quite rapidly and or balding, with the understanding that we really need to do more as far as our efforts to develop those who will come after us and who will be replacing us in terms of public health, and those needs are only increasing, so therefore not only do we have a need to replace ourselves, but we have to increase that N, or that total number, who will be replacing us as the needs increasingly grow. Finally, the recognition that more and more students are looking for ways to connect, ways to get involved around their futures, around their lives while they're on campus. So this effort that we're talking about today is one that has been designed and has been in developing over the past couple years, a means to try to connect people who are in public health, both academics as well as practicing professionals, with colleges and universities around the country, particularly those who have strong liberal arts and sciences orientations, but who may not have any definitive programs on their respective campuses aligned with public health. So that the effort that we're focusing on is not only to pull more students into the profession and let them know what is public health and why they can be an active participant in this effort, but also to make the broader masses of students who may have no individual or professional interests in public health themselves become at least knowledgeable and aware of what public health is and how it affects them on every day of their lives, so that when, you know, things might evolve that will call attention to public health, that they'll be aware of and more knowledgeable about participating in those activities that pertain to their own lives, the lives of their families, the lives of those that they interact with. So that's basically, you know, many of the reasons for, you know, why we're here today, to try to see how we can strengthen, you know, that initiative. Within APHA, I'm happy to say that the interest is growing and being developed as we speak here today. As we'll hear from the presenters, the Committee on Affiliates within APHA is trying to emphasize an effort to pull affiliate and affiliate members into this effort to work with colleges and universities around the country. The Student Assembly, now the largest section within APHA of, I believe I was told, somewhere approximating 6,000 members, are increasingly getting interested in this effort and wanting to be a part in terms of working with undergraduates around the country. There will be, within the next year or so, hopefully a policy statement that's being developed that will be presented next year before the APHA Governing Council that will align, again, this effort with APHA's support and commitment behind it. So through a variety of channels, our effort here and the reason for bringing this session to APHA is to try to illustrate and promote the involvement of those of us who are involved in APHA in this effort around the country. We have three distinguished panelists to share some insights with us today. The way we've planned the session is that each will, you know, share somewhere in an approximately 15 minutes or so of presentation of various highlights in this effort, and then we're reserving, you know, 30 to 40 minutes for dialogue, discussion, you know, and involvement, because really, while we're, you know, up here talking about it, the reality of what we need to do is to get the maximum engagement of everyone who is interested in taking part in this effort, because it's an effort that will require, you know, a maximum involvement of people from around the country. Dr. Richard Riegelman, who I can, you know, say really is the father of this whole initiative and has been leading it. I'm not sure what he does in his day job, because every time I talk to him or communicate with him, it's something in reference to this particular initiative. Dr. Riegelman was the founding dean and current professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at the George Washington School of Public Health. He is going to be sharing with us, you know, some history of the effort, some of the background, some of the major importance that has led to and is continuing to push this effort forward, and give us some insights in terms of, you know, what lies ahead and where we, you know, might be going with this initiative. My colleague, Dr. Susan Radius, is a professor in the health sciences department and directs a student internship program in community health education at Towson University. She is also the past chair of the Intersectional Council of APHA, a former member of the Education Board of APHA, and currently sits as a member of the Executive Board of APHA. She will be sharing with us some insights in terms of, from an academic's perspective, how do we get this effort moving forward? How do we develop the various strategies to engage ourselves and undergraduates? Also sharing with us some insights, particularly with regard to the importance of the workforce development efforts, the internship experience that she has led at Towson in terms of getting undergraduates deeply involved with experiential learning efforts and efforts that bring them into the real world of public health outside of the halls of academe. And will also share with us in a more formal manner the endorsement of this effort thus far by APHA. Finally, and definitely not least, is Thomas Quaid, who is the Deputy Director of the Akron Health Department, which for many involved in public health has long been recognized as, you know, not so much the Akron Health Department as much as the Academic Health Department, because the Health Department has a long-standing history of involving students in providing that experiential learning coming from the world of practice and insights into opportunities that might lie ahead in those students' future careers. Tom is also a longstanding leader in APHA within the Committee on Affiliates. Presently, he's the president of the Ohio affiliate of APHA and very involved within Region 5 or the Great Lakes region effort within APHA. And I'm happy to also acknowledge that he's recently been appointed the chair of APHA's Affiliate Capacity Building Initiative Advisory Committee, which is that committee that, for those of us who have been involved, we more often refer to it as the Kellogg Committee or whatever, thanks to the funding to support that effort to build affiliate capacity that was awarded to APHA a year and a half ago from the Kellogg Foundation. So he's deeply involved in that, and I think will be more deeply involved in it over the next year. And yet, he's committed to this undergraduate effort that is moving forward. With that, you have a sense as to, you know, those who we're going to be hearing from. I'll let them succeed each other up here without my interruption, and we'll have some interesting discussion and dialogue upon their completion. Thank you.
Well, I get to start this by giving you an overview of undergraduate public health, and I think we should start by saying, undergraduate public health, what is it? Because for 100 years almost, since formal public health education began, it was a graduate discipline. From its very roots, it was designed to be a graduate discipline, and undergraduate really was a contradiction in terms. And it's only in the last few years that that's happened. And I think we can see some of those importance of words. There are two schools of public health that call themselves graduate schools of public health. There is a council in that represents most of the programs in public health that calls itself the Graduate Council. So the idea of undergraduate public health is really not hardwired to the way we've thought about public health for almost 100 years. So it's something new. And so I'd like to give you a little sense of what it is, but before we do that, we have Truth in Advertising, and I have had some disclosures that I've worked with the Association for Prevention, Teaching, and Research and their faculty development program and curriculum guide, and this through the APTR-CDC cooperative agreement. And I'm a series editor for the Public Health Focus Series, Central Public Health, and graduate
courses. So that disclosure for you.
What is this undergraduate public health? Well, this movement that we're calling the educated citizen in public health really began with the Institute of Medicine 2003 report on who will keep the public healthy. And it made two fine points on page 144, fortunately in bold. It said, quote, "Public health is an essential part of the training of citizens." In 2003, that was a new idea. And secondly, it said, all undergraduates should have access to education in public health. Well, I think most of the people who read that document for the first time thought the all was a typo. And they thought it was a typo because there are 2,000 four-year colleges, not considering two-year colleges, 2,000 four-year colleges in this universe of the United States. And it is, and of those 2,000, about 100 have accredited schools or accredited programs, just over 100. So the other 1,900, as I call them, are really the issue here. How do we get public health not just to the people who where it's easy, where there's a graduate institution sitting at their doorstep, but where it's hard, where there is no infrastructure, where there is no support, where there is no connection with public health? So, and how do we do it in such a way that it really educates them to understand what public health is, so that they're ready to become health professionals, including public health, but they're also ready to become citizens who do things like vote, and pay taxes, and do other things that very much bear on how public health functions. So we hope this is going to be a much broader activity, and yes, it will increase, and yes, it is an important part of the workforce, and yes, it will stimulate the workforce issue, but we hope it'll do more than that, that it will make people understand at an educated citizen level what public health is and how it affects their lives, and how what they need to do to make it work. So, how did we go about trying to get this started? Well, after 2002, there was interest in the Association of Schools of Public Health. There was interest in the Association for Prevention, Teaching, and Research, which sponsors or brings together most of the programs. And there was interest in, equally, it probably has more important, there was interest in arts and sciences. And so we're going to talk about two key organizations in arts and sciences. They go by acronyms too, but they're unfamiliar acronyms. CCAS, that's the Council of Colleges of Arts and Sciences. It represents the largest dean's organization. And one called AACNU, the Association of American Colleges and Universities. They're the umbrella organization for undergraduate education, and they represent the clear majority of all institutions, ranging from the small liberal arts and public institutions to the biggest research institutions. So they are the umbrella. And we were fortunate to be able to have a consensus conference in 2006 sponsored by ASPH, APTR, CCAS, and AACNU. And that really has been a trigger to move this agenda forward. And what did that consensus conference do? Well, it came to some general, it basically provided a roadmap for implementing the IOM recommendation that all undergraduates should have access to education and public health. It agreed that it should be an educated citizen goal. It should introduce students to a range of career options, and it should provide experiential learning. And the usual model in arts and sciences today for experiential learning is service learning. And that, as we're going to talk about, is directly and immediately relevant to what we hope will be a new partner in this activity, APHA, and specifically the APHA Committee on Affiliates, because that's where the expertise is, that's where the need can be filled. So what did the consensus conference do? It said, well, how are we going to frame this undergraduate? How is it going to be different than graduate? How is it going to be structured? And we came up with a series of recommendations that basically said everybody should teach the framework that has three basic courses: Public Health 101, Epidemiology 101, and Global Health 101. And these should be courses that if you have a distribution requirement like social science, Public Health 101, like science, epidemiology 101 with the laboratory, and increasingly global learning, Global Health 101, these should fulfill your distribution requirements. So it's not just the person who has found public health who will take it, but the people who are looking for what they're going to do the rest of their lives who will take these courses. And we've spent a good deal of time trying to define, well, what do these mean? This document we have actually is now available on the web at APTR web.org, as well as at the AACNU website, AACU.org, and will soon be available in hard copy for, we have several thousand copies, and basically outlines Public Health 101, Epidemiology 101, Global Health 101, with what they call enduring understandings in arts and sciences, what you take away from these courses and use for maybe the rest of your life. Curriculum frameworks, which outline basically what a syllabus might look like, and finally, learning outcomes. By the way, learning outcomes is a good word in arts and science. Competencies is a bad word. The difference is very subtle. They clearly want, you know, to be, it's disconnected from specific job expectations. And but otherwise, it's very much has same, very much the same feel. So that basically we're trying to work with the arts and sciences terminology, and I can tell you it's been an interesting translation. They speak a different language even when the concepts are the same. For instance, pipelines, they say, well, that's for oil and sewage. Right? Whereas pathways, that's a very good thing to have, is a variety of pathways to public health. So that the language has been very important to get the language right. And so we're putting a lot of time trying to be sure that we're speaking the language of arts and sciences. And so, because that's where the students are. That's where the other 95%, that's where the other 95% are. So we proposed, and this group has now promoted, a concept of 101, three courses, and then what if you are interested in doing more? What if you have expertise in environmental sciences, you have expertise in health behavior, you have expertise in policy? Couldn't you do more? Yes, absolutely. You could create a minor, and it should build on those core courses, and it should have experiential learning as part of it. But experiential learning should be tied in to hopefully all of the undergraduate, but certainly into the minor as an integral part of that development. So minors and experiential learning keep coming back as an important thing. So quickly, I'll just give you a little sense of these three courses, but there's a little, I think we could spend a lot of time, we can maybe address some questions. Basically, Public Health 101 is the big picture. Tends to be domestically oriented. What I like to define it for people who aren't in public health is what makes us sick, what keeps us healthy, and what can we do together about it. Okay? So we really try to figure out how to connect. And it's designed to include the healthcare system as well as the public health system to try to understand how these delivery systems fit together. So that's the overview of what we try to do in Public Health 101. What is epidemiology from us? Arts and sciences perspective. It is a method of understanding, the scientific method for understanding evidence-based thinking, for understanding how to understand about etiology and effectiveness. Skills that are not only important in public health and medicine, but are important in areas wherever they go. I always like to give the example, Bayes' theorem, that sounds so esoteric, and we use it in screening, but it's absolutely relevant to baggage handling and lie detector tests. So we try to use the examples and the flavor of a much broader conceptual framework, and epidemiology can really be a way of thinking, and that's the bottom line. Teach epidemiology as a way of thinking. And finally, global health, which anybody who's had experience with undergraduates knows that's where the passion is. That's
That's where the students are absolutely committed to trying to do something. And I think there's a lot that goes from, you know, I was to say from Bill Gates to Bono. They've been convinced that global health is really is something that they can do something about, and I think they're right. But they have to have some grounding, and they have to understand the economics of development a bit. They have to understand about health systems a bit, and they have to understand again about evidence. So yeah, we really try to get them to give some coherence, and once again, we have a framework for Global Health 101, so that they really come away with some frameworks for thinking. I keep coming back. So resources: the AACU.org. APTR has a website called teachpublichealth.org, and ASPH has one called pathwaystopublichealth.org. So there's lots of resources now out there, and if you look at these three, you'll find pretty much what's around on the web. How do we now integrate public health into an arts and sciences curriculum? Well, first of all, the easiest way to do it is to hardwire it to the distribution requirements. Public health is a social science distribution requirement, epidemiology is a science distribution requirement, and for those of us who have been out of undergraduate for quite a few years, this concept of global health, or global learning, or global studies, that's where most colleges and universities are now. That's a distribution requirement at about two-thirds of our undergraduate institutions. Now, the other way we do it is the AACNU has a major initiative that was started in the millennium to really reframe undergraduate education. And it's interesting, they've reframed it in a way in which they see public health as the perfect example of how to implement it. They want to talk about knowledge of human cultures in the physical and natural world. They want to talk about intellectual and practical skills. Interesting, practical skills. Personal and social responsibility. By what they mean by that is getting out in the community and understanding what's going on out there. And integrative learning, what they mean by that is we might call lifelong learning skills. So that they see, as we get down to this, that public health is a great example. It's interdisciplinary, it's community focused, it's globally oriented, and it teaches skills for lifelong learning. So it's not a hard sell to those people in arts and sciences who really are trying to transform undergraduate education. So where are we? Well, we started at a pretty low base. We're not quite sure where we are, where we were in 2003, but it wasn't very big. This last 6 months, the Macy Foundation has given AACNU some money to do a survey, and we do have some data now. And they've concluded that about 16% of four-year colleges and universities currently have minors or majors in public health or related disciplines. That's actually a bit higher than we had anticipated, that it's getting out there. Secondly, the reason it's probably that high is that there's been enormous growth in schools of public health and their undergraduate and fully 50% of institutions with graduate public health have undergraduate majors or minors, and most of the rest have courses. But, and this is the big but, only 5% of bachelor's degree institutions have undergraduate public health minors or majors. That's where the action is. And we have got a lot of work to do to turn that 5%, hopefully, into a lot higher. The key, we think, to doing that and connecting this is to add to the mix that's out there APHA, and specifically APHA affiliates, and specifically experiential learning. Built into this idea is that experiential learning is an important component of undergraduate major or minor, and experiential learning is quite broad. The most common framework is service learning. Service learning differs from the standard internship in that even though their experience may be shadowing or sitting in or observing, they come together and reflect. What is it? What is this organization you're working with? What's its mission? What's its constituency? How is it organized? What's its budget? How does it get its job done? So that they really talk about and reflect. And hopefully we'll hear some more of those kind of understandings. Certainly the concept of an academic health department has been key to understanding those ways of approaching things. Interestingly, arts and sciences is bought into this. We're not selling this to arts and sciences. 63% of minors or majors in AACNU survey included experiential learning, and even a higher percentage of those that don't have a graduate program. So this is arts and sciences. They believe it. They just don't know anything about public health in doing that, but they do know about experiential learning. So where are we? Well, we are beginning to seriously talk. With APHA, that's not the first time. We early in this process, we met with the Committee on Affiliates. We've had discussions with George Benjamin and others to try to understand how to connect with the APHA, and we're now really ready for something substantial to do that. And so that we're hoping that there will be to encourage affiliate members to participate in originally in faculty development. This is what we did before, the faculty development effort that began. By the way, we had 250 faculty from around the country go through this faculty development program. And also to connect for the teaching. The second thing we're trying to do is trying to integrate undergraduate public health into Healthy People 2020. And that process is moving rapidly. Pat Remington, who's in the audience, is playing a key role in that. And we are trying to connect with that. We're trying to develop a framework we call Education for Health that's been developed by a group called the Healthy People Curriculum Task Force, made up of 8 health profession organizations and 2 public health organizations, to try to integrate undergraduate public health. And so that we're hoping to develop we're developing a framework we call Education for Health that is being proposed as an educational underpinning. And it's an interesting concept. It's an idea that somehow we need to connect the K through 20 process. That our education system is disconnected, and we need to think about vertical and horizontal integration. We need to think about going from the K through 12 health literacy initiative to the undergraduate public health efforts to what we're calling clinical prevention and population health at the clinical level, as well as obviously public health education in the formal sense. So we need to have the vertical integration. We also need to connect clinicians, public health professionals, with educators, and that kind of horizontal integration. So this is the framework that we're putting forward for consideration as an educational underpinning for Healthy People 2020. And if that's successful, we see some natural objectives that flow from that. So we hope, and we do have data on clinical prevention and population health framework, and we have the data and some more that we are just seeing from the AACU and you data on what's out there, at least in 2008. Questions for you. How can the APHA get involved? I'll give you some of my thoughts, but I hope as part of the discussion we'll come up with some ideas about how APHA members can get involved. Well, first of all, we hope you will work with what we hope is about to be a Connecting with the Colleges initiative. We are proposing to the Council, the Committee on Affiliates, that there be a formal effort to connect with the colleges, those 1,900 particularly that don't have public health infrastructure, and also with the Student Assembly to try to get their involvement in that. And we see that there are lots of roles that public health professionals can play, certainly in experiential learning, but these institutions need help. They need guest speakers, they need curriculum advice, and at times they need full courses taught. And nobody is better positioned than the person in the community who is doing public health. We hope to make those kind of connections. And in exchange, we hope they'll be providing adjunct faculty positions, and they'll be providing recognition a variety of different ways. And what we're going to try to do is to create some pilot programs, perhaps in a couple of regions, to try to really get this off the ground and see if we can show the different ways to do this. And if it works, hopefully we can create some models that can be distributed across the country and widely used. So we hope over the next couple of years, 2-3 years, to really be able to work with APHA and to try to make some headway into actually moving from a good idea to some real implementation. So, lots more places to, these are some of the same things about the curriculum recommendation. By the way, if you haven't picked up, there is a special issue, a theme issue of the American Journal of Preventive Medicine on your on the back table. There is, all of these resources are in on a summary sheet with all the websites indicated, and there's also a front page article from the Washington Post last month on undergraduate public health. So there's lots to lots of material out there, and at the end, I'd be glad to take questions on specifics, but I think the key now is, with no further ado, to talk about people who are doing this.
Sorry. It's not in the right order.
Try other.